Good morning. Welcome to the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton, a welcoming Unitarian Universalist congregation. My name is Eileen Gillespie, and I serve as your intern minister here. Another welcome to those who are new or visiting us for the first or the first few times. Welcome again to you. It is so good to be together.
Thank you, Eileen. It's great to be back with you after three Sundays not being here. Today we have something extraordinary going on after service, all-church meeting, and I wanted to just explain that to you a little bit in case catch you up on it. We are a faith tradition that stands for justice and equality, and each of us is called individually to embody that as our conscience dictates. But there are times when we collectively decide that it's important for us to speak out on issues of justice with one voice. So today we'll decide if we join with the Unitarian Universalist Association and many other Unitarian Universalist churches, as well as churches of other denominations, to hang a banner in front of our church that proclaims that Black Lives Matter. Now, over the past year, there have been many discussions, sermons, and learning opportunities to let people have time to think about the issue. Today at 12:30 in Fellowship Hall, the issue will be discussed and voted upon. Everyone is welcome to attend. Pursuant to our bylaws, however, only those who have been members for more than 60 days can vote. And to do that, you need to check in with Helen Jones, the clerk, as you go into the door of Fellowship Hall. The democratic process is very important in our decision, in our tradition. And if we are going to take a position like this, it needs to be done through that democratic process. So I hope you will stay after church and participate.
Community is so important to us. So as is the custom of this congregation, I invite you now into a brief time of greeting your neighbors, especially someone you may not have met before.
Do the call to worship first.
Okay.
Yeah. As was just evident here, community is indeed so important to us. And today we are celebrating, I would say, a lesser-known Jewish holiday. And as I was preparing, I was reflecting on that tradition and how important the element of community is to that tradition. And I'd like us to come into worship thinking about the words of Psalm 131, which say, "How good it is, how lovely, this fellowship of those who come together in true community as one." It's our tradition to begin our worship by lighting the chalice, the symbol of our faith. And I'm not sure if we have a chalice lighter this morning. We don't, so Mike, would you light the chalice for us? And as Mike lights it, I invite you to join in the unison words that are taken from Isaiah. The wilderness and dry land shall be glad. The desert shall rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it shall bloom abundantly and rejoice in joy and singing.
Good morning, friends. So as Tom shared earlier, today our service is about the Jewish holiday of Tu B'Shvat. Has anyone in this room ever heard of this holiday before? This service is doing better than the 9 a.m. So first of all, can everyone say together, Tu B'Shvat? Tu B'Shvat. Ooh, that was great. So today is a New Year celebration, even though it's not January 1st. Today is the Jewish New Year of Trees. Can anybody think about another New Year celebration that doesn't happen on January the 1st? Anybody have any thoughts? Up in the balcony. Chinese New Year, that's a great one. Anybody else? The Tibetan New Year? It's called Nowruz? Great. Great. Well, just like Rosh Hashanah, which I'll talk about later, is actually a civil New Year, a governmental New Year, not a sacred New Year. Anybody else have other New Year celebrations that don't happen on January 1st coming to mind? Well, I think about going back to school. That's an observance of a new year beginning. I think about the new church year beginning. For those of us involved in economics, the fiscal year, our church fiscal year starts on July 1st. So these are all types of celebrations honoring new years. So today is the new year for trees. How cool is that, right? Because nobody can actually be sure of a tree's birthday. It's sort of hard. Is it when the tree was planted? Is it when the seed germinated? It's hard to tell. So Tu B'Shvat today is celebrated as the birthday of all trees. And so if a tree was planted before Tu B'Shvat in one year, it's older than a tree planted after Tu B'Shvat in that year. And this is important because in the Jewish religion, the tradition is that a tree needs to be 3 years old before we can take its fruit to eat or to give as a gift, or most importantly, to give as payment, as tithing to our church or temple, or as a way to pay people with. Now, if anybody brought fruit with them this morning to pay me with, see me after the service. But that is how this holiday came to be, that it was the day on which farmers observed the birthdays of the trees and calculated whether we could begin to eat fruit from those trees or not. And this holiday has special celebrations for Jewish people like my mother. So one of the things that we do on Tu B'Shvat is that we eat special types of fruits, many types of fruits. Some people say 10 types of fruits, 15, I've even heard 30. So does anybody here have a favorite fruit that they would like to share? Pomegranate. That's a great one also in Judaism, because it is said that the pomegranate has as many seeds as days in the year, so we eat a pomegranate on Rosh Hashanah, on the Jewish New Year, to celebrate a sweet new year. Anybody else have a favorite fruit? Nathan?
Peaches.
Peaches. I thought you were going to say pizza. Peaches. Peaches is a great, that's a great fruit. Pizza doesn't count. Anybody else?
Cherries.
That's a great one. That's a great one. So I invite you today to maybe eat a fruit, a favorite fruit, in celebration of this holiday. Another thing that we do to observe this holiday is planting trees or thanking the trees and thinking about the environment, replenishing and healing the world. And we also think today about ways that we ourselves can be fruitful. And being fruitful means being giving and helping and kind. It could mean, I see people chuckling, it could mean being fruitful and multiplying, but that's not what today's about, although that is in the Bible. It's thinking about how can we help others, what can we give to others, and how can we help to heal the world. And today, finally, is also about hope, because even though it is still wintertime here, no buds, no leaves on those trees outside, I'm sure we all saw the snow. The trees and the flowers and the plants and the grass will bloom soon. So, young people, I invite you now to go to your religious education classes in that spirit, with hope for what is to come. And may your classes this morning and may our service today be fruitful, just like beautiful and healthy trees. I invite you now into a time of prayer and reflection. A prayer for Tu B'Shvat. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, borei pri hagafen. Blessed are you, Lord our God, ruler of the universe, who creates the fruit of the vine. Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu melech haolam, borei pri haetz. Praised are you, Lord our God, ruler of the universe, who creates the fruit of the trees. And words of meditation from our own hymn, Who Can Say? Make us this day strong like a tree of life with good fruit. May this day, today, make us strong like a tree of life with good fruit. May we now forgive that we may live. Bless us now. Amen. Bless us now. Amen.
May it be so. When we come together each week in this, our faith community, we are given a gift, the opportunity to be generous. And in our offertory each week, not only do we express generosity in support of the mission of this beloved community, but we also share half of our non-pledge offerings each week with a charity, either local, national, or international, that we feel is in line with the mission and vision of this congregation. The organization that our offerings will help to support this month is a wonderful organization called Rhea House, which helps survivors of sex trafficking and slavery. This is a wonderful organization, much needed, that our wonderful own congregant Diane Miller is very involved with. So I invite you to give generously this morning in support of Rhea House and in support of this beloved community. I invite the ushers to come forward as our morning's offering is gratefully given and received.
Our reading comes from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 6. Therefore, I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you'll eat or drink, or about your body, what you'll wear. Is not life more than food and the body more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They do not sow or reap or stow away in barns, and yet they're fed. Can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the lilies of the field grow. They do not labor or spin. Yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown in the oven, will he not much more clothe you? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? But seek first the kingdom of God and righteousness, and all these other things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, For tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has trouble enough of its own. I invite you now to sing in response hymn number 396, I Know This Rose Will Open. You may remain seated for this.
The Reverend Greta Cosby, Minister Emeritus of the First UU Church of Wichita, Kansas, has a beautiful reading entitled New Year for Trees. It reads, I share a favorite celebration, Tu B'Shvat, the Jewish New Year for Trees. This new year comes midway in the lunar month of Shvat, which rides astride January and February of our solar year. At that time, it is said, the sap begins to rise in the almond trees in Israel. There is no set ritual or service for Tu B'Shvat, she writes, but it is observed by reading scriptural passages referring to trees, singing seasonal songs, eating fruits and nuts, and planting trees. She writes, I was touched by joy when I first discovered Tu B'Shvat in a children's book, for I have long had a sense of fellowship with trees. Since I was a child, I have sought their company from time to time because I like the way I feel in their presence. I enjoy their beauty, but it is more than that. I use the word presence in a very strong sense, for I feel their presence as living things, and in that presence, I often feel relaxed and centered, peaceful, restored to inner equilibrium. And finally, she writes, for many of us, life is the meaning of the tree. But for me, perhaps, the greatest thing about the tree is its silence. Whatever the tree says to us, whatever it answers to our questioning, the tree gives us its message without words. And the tree bears with us as well. It does not judge. It does not react to our anxieties. It does not run after us. It just stands there with open arms. So as an interfaith, multi-faith spiritual community, we as Unitarian Universalists observe many different New Year's celebrations, as we discussed earlier. The Chinese New Year, Rosh Hashanah, which marks the beginning of a new calendar year in the Jewish tradition, the winter solstice, just to name a few of these New Years that we celebrate. But interestingly enough, as is evidenced by the small number of hands raised when I asked who knew about Tu B'Shvat, there are some New Year celebrations that we often overlook, ones that are directly connected to our Judeo-Christian roots. And as someone who grew up nominally Jewish and nominally Christian, you'd think that I, of all people, wouldn't overlook a celebration as important as one honoring a New Year, but it happens. I actually did not know, and Tom will speak more about this later, but Judaism technically celebrates four New Years throughout each lunisolar year. Little confusing, right? Because the Jewish calendar takes into account the phases of both the moon and the sun in its calculations. But I digress. Who here knew that Judaism celebrates four New Years in a year? Anybody? I'm doing great this morning. There is Rosh Hashanah, arguably the best known Jewish holiday, on which Jews eat apples and honey to signify the beginning of a sweet new year. However, on this day, Jews are actually celebrating the beginning of a new civil year. The ecclesiastical or sacred new year actually began 6 months before on another New Year's date. There's also a new year for tithing of cattle, important in ancient times, not quite as important now, and a new year for tithing and time telling of trees. This new year is called Tu B'Shvat. Now, since most of us likely do not tithe our church pledges in the form of trees, cattle, fruit, or crops, although please let me know if you do, because I'd like to hear your formula for calculating your pledge, not to mention your method of delivering said pledge, but what exactly does a new year for trees mean? Well, most Jewish sources consider this holiday to be the day on which, as I shared earlier, fruits are designated as orla, that is, forbidden to eat, because they have grown during the first 3 years after a tree's planting, and for separating fruits that are old enough for tithing. This date was selected because most of the winter rains in Israel are over, the sap has begun to rise within the trees, and the fruit has started to ripen. This 15th day of the month of Shvat, which will begin at sunset today, has become a minor holiday, Tu B'Shvat, and on this day, as I shared, it is customary to eat fruits, particularly fruits typical of the land of Israel. Some people even eat a meal of many kinds of fruits. Some say 15, some say 10, some say 30. I can't tell you why. Some Jews observe this holiday with a Seder-style meal that uses the symbolism of fruits and nuts with and without shells to symbolize the process of opening up to God's holiness. I love that idea. And in modern Israel and in Jewish communities worldwide, Tu B'Shvat has come to symbolize respect for the earth, promoting environmental awareness, and planting trees. I myself celebrated this holiday for the first time with my college Hillel group. And since I lived in Florida during my undergraduate years, we had an abundant Tu B'Shvat meal, including kumquats, oranges, grapefruits, and pomelos picked in our very own neighborhood. There were many things I enjoyed about celebrating Tu B'Shvat and thinking about this holiday, but I think that the Reverend Greta Cosby put it well when she said in her earlier reading that perhaps the greatest thing about the trees is their silence. Whatever the tree says to us, whatever it answers to our questioning, the tree gives us its message without words, and the tree bears with us. It does not judge. It does not react to our anxieties. It does not run after us. It just stands there with open arms. What a good reminder that is for us, that just as in the words of Matthew that Tom read earlier, nature is there to remind us that we too are called toward peace and toward stillness, just as we are also called toward toiling and striving. The trees and the fruits and the flowers remind us of hope that spring will come, both for the trees and for our own hearts. One day, all will bloom, and this includes us. The holiday of Tu B'Shvat reminds me of the need for rest and self-cultivation, just as the trees are given 3 years to mature before the farmers are allowed to use their fruits for tithing, which is where this holiday comes from. The tree needs time and rest, just as we do. We would do well to, in those words of Matthew, consider the lilies of the field a little more often. We would do well to remember Matthew's injunction, if God so clothes the grass of the field, which is alive today and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will God not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? Therefore, do not worry, saying, what will we eat, or what will we drink, or what will we wear? For indeed, your Creator knows that you need all these things. But strive first for the kingdom of God and God's righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. So do not worry about today. Do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will bring worries of its own. Today's trouble is enough for today. The trees, the grass, the lilies of the field, and the kumquats and oranges teach us to have faith and not to worry, to take some time for contemplation and peace. And on the other hand, the holiday of Tu B'Shvat and the fruits and the trees teach us too about productivity, giving, doing, since this holiday has to do with tithing after all. And when I think about the trees, the fruit, the grass, the buds and the blossoms, what I really think about comes down to being fruitful. What does it mean to be fruitful? Well, now and again in the winter times of our own lives, we may feel as though we are like those trees and plants in the winter, frozen beneath the snow, not bearing fruit due to our frigid slumbering or not giving shade to others due to our bare branches. We may feel as though we are not giving very much, not being productive in the ways that we strive for. I have spoken with so many people in my work as a pastor and chaplain who have expressed this feeling that their lives are not bearing fruit in the ways in which they had hoped they would. But what we so often forget is this, that we cannot know the ways in which our lives have borne fruit and will continue to bear fruit in so many places we cannot see. The poet Khalil Gibran, in his most famous work, The Prophet, wrote, "If this is my day of harvest, in what fields have I sowed the seed, and in what unremembered seasons?" Indeed, I'm sure we can all think of people who have touched our lives deeply that we may never have gotten the opportunity to thank for the profound contributions they made. We may never have gotten to acknowledge to them the fruits that their lives bore in our own lives. And we have each been this for other people as well. I think of all the teachers in my life who patiently taught me Spanish, who corrected my convoluted grasp of mathematics, who sat with me after school to improve my lackluster performance in high school physics. I think of my piano teacher's wizened hands as she gently corrected my scales and calmed me by playing her Tibetan singing bowl when I would get frustrated playing a challenging piece. I think of the beautiful Muslim cemeteries I saw last spring on a trip to Turkey, the rows and rows of graves, each one decorated with a bathtub-shaped basin in which trees and flowers were planted. How even in death, those lives were bearing fruit. I think of my trip to Poland to visit the concentration camps, how compared to the rest of the Polish landscape, the concentration camps seemed to teem with wildflowers. How the tour guide at Auschwitz commented on this, saying that the high concentrations of ash in locations like the crematoria, like the pond into which ashes were dumped, like the heap of compost mixed with burnt flesh and bone, how we could tell where these spots used to be because of how many flowers bloomed in those places. How I could see a commotion of flowers blooming from the bombed-out crematorium. How a tree was rising amidst the concrete rubble of a gas chamber. How lost lives continue to bear fruit. The Reverend Gary Kowalski, who served for 25 years at the UU Church in Burlington, Vermont, and also as the interim minister just down the road in Sudbury a few years ago, wrote a powerful poem for Arbor Day, similar to Tu B'Shvat, in which he says, "Each of us truly can say, I have harvested where I did not sow." And so we should give something back to the world, not should in any moralistic sense, but in the same manner that acorns should produce oak trees and apple seeds should give fruit. Gratitude is a natural outgrowth of living, service a response to the abundance with which we have been blessed. So may we each be given the discernment to know when we need to rest and when we need to toil. May we each remember the countless ways in which our own lives will bear fruit for others, even after we are gone. And may we all be blessed with the fruitfulness of hope, knowing that the world and we will always bloom again, even after long winters of the Spirit. May it be so.
One of the joys of having someone share the pulpit with me is that sometimes we can each offer a reflection on the same topic, and that's what we'll do today. And another joy of having an intern minister like Eileen is that learning goes in both directions. Eileen's here to learn from me and from all of you, but we too learn from Eileen. And although I consider myself pretty well versed in Jewish holidays and traditions, I've never before been involved in a celebration of Teshuvah, the New Year of Trees. I heard of the holiday, and I knew it had something to do with trees, but that was about it. But when Eileen raised the idea of celebrating this year, I started doing a bit of reading, and my thoughts began to go in many directions. Now, there's really nothing unusual about having different beginnings of a new year for different purposes. We talked about observing, you know, January 1st as a new year, and of course, our church year, like the school year, begins in September, and our fiscal year in July, and the Lunar New Year that's so important to many in the Asian culture, which is coming up in a couple of weeks. And then there's the liturgical new year for the Christian church, which begins in late November with the first Sunday of Advent. And this new year of trees, as Eileen told you, is actually one of four Jewish new years, the most famous being Rosh Hashanah, the new year for people, animals, and legal contracts, and the one by which the Jewish calendar is usually set. But why not lots of different times to celebrate a new year? Because, in fact, our lives are full of new beginnings. And as I look deeper into the meaning of this holiday, several thoughts emerged. You know, I was thinking about this while I was in Mexico recently, where they will celebrate the start of the growing season in the next week or so with the Feast of Candelaria. Spring indeed comes early in Mexico like it does in Israel. This is the season when trees are budding. But then I was drawn to the idea of this celebration of new life coming as it does here for us in winter. Now in Israel, it comes at a time after the rain that once again causes the trees to bud and eventually to bear fruit. Like our celebrations of springtime or Easter, it's all about hope. It's especially about hope in tough times. It's about the possibility of renewal and new life. Themes, I think, so important for us all to remember and celebrate whenever the holiday allows. For without hope, all is lost. It is hope, if you think about it, that we live by. You know, I'm reminded of a story in the Islamic tradition that recounts that when the Prophet Muhammad is asked, what should one do if they know today is the last day for the world? And the answer he gives is plant a tree. The planting of trees, the budding of trees, is a powerful, powerful statement of hope and courage and perseverance. Reflecting on this holiday also reminded me about the many parallels between how a healthy tree grows and what it takes for us humans to live a good life. Good soil to grow in, strong roots to hold us up, nurturing care, watering, if you will. You know, this analogy between trees and humans is drawn over and over again in Hebrew scripture, starting with Psalm 1. It begins by describing the righteous person as, quote, like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season and whose leaves do not wither. Now, surely we could develop a whole sermon just around that theme. But this holiday is about more than just the symbolism of trees. It's also about marking time. For the purpose of tithing, the age of the trees, as Eileen recounted to you, is counted on this day. And this idea led me to think about how trees are truly a way for us to mark time. As a child, and I bet many of you had this experience too, I learned about counting the rings in a tree trunk to determine how old the tree was when it was cut down. I see nods. You did too. And when I was young, there was a giant mulberry tree in our yard, just outside the back door. Now, I thought it was a beautiful tree. You know, it had leaves almost like mittens. And, of course, each year it bore fruit. And each year that event brought the cry to cut down the tree. It was a messy tree. It had stood a long time. It had several low-spreading branches and was easy to climb. You could go up and sit on a branch and think the deep thoughts that 8 or 9 year olds do, and indeed see the world from a different perspective. Well, time went along. I grew to be a teenager. I didn't climb the tree anymore. And then one day I came home from school and the tree had been cut down. There was a big stump. Now, I wasn't totally surprised, as its falling fruit had gotten worse and squashing under people's feet on the sidewalk and had been an annoyance because it tracked into the house on people's shoes. As a child, I'd wished that the tree would just stop bearing fruit, but it just got more fruitful instead. Well, I went over to the stump and I looked at all the rings, but I couldn't really bear to count them. I was sad that the tree was gone. Not that I'd climbed it in a while or even paid much attention to it as a teenager. You know, and as I think back, I think that tree cutting marked something else. I think it marked the end of my childhood. I wonder, are there things in your life where trees have marked time and events? Maybe trees that you planted and that grew with you. I also planted trees as a child. Some were little volunteer saplings that I dug up in the woods. A couple of them I planted with my grandparents, and I still see those trees today. They are huge, towering trees, reminders of all that is past. A living monument to times past and to those gone before. For many years, I stood right in this pulpit, and I looked to the left out that window at the most beautiful ancient oak tree. You remember it? It was on our property in back of the parsonage. And the story was that it was the same age as this building that we are in now. It had grown with the church. I went to look at it many times, and its big trunk was so hollowed out you could actually go inside it. It wasn't healthy. I knew it was nearing the end of its life. And each year, fewer branches leafed out, and finally, just as we were building the connector building, sadly, we had to take it down. It is as if that tree marked one phase in the life of this church and let go just as we entered a new phase. And isn't that the way of life? The joy of newness and new life seems to come at the same time as the passing away of the old. A reminder that joy and sadness seem to always be intertwined. You know, it's important to come together and address pressing issues of justice, as we will do later in our meeting today. It's important to challenge ourselves and others to good works and service to others. Of course, these are at the core of this faith tradition. But it's also important to allow ourselves to do things like think about trees and mark time together. I hope we won't let our busy lives or even the good causes we believe in and work for rob us of the time for those moments of thought and meditation which give us perspective, insight, a sense of continuity with the world, and peace in our hearts. Indeed, we should take time to consider trees, flowers, lilies. As we part, may you go strong as an oak,
flexible as a willow.
May you live as constant as the pine,
and as changing as the maple.
May you flower like the dogwood,
and produce good fruit as the apple tree.
May you reach for the sky.
Give shade and protection to others.
And may your days be long like a mighty sequoia.